You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning, happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week, I am super honoured to be delighted to be joined by trusted experts who really kindly join me every Sunday to share their knowledge, their expertise of the world of business and people and what's happening on the ground here in Oxfordshire. And on today's show, it's no different. We are going to be talking all about the world of HR and also an update on HR legislation, some of the things that are really important for you as small businesses. And to do this, we are joined by the wonderful Sarah Cook of We Do HR Support, who is also kindly our show sponsor. So definitely check Sarah out if you don't know her already. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Sarah after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I hope you enjoyed that song. If you are just tuning in, just a reminder, I am introducing Sarah Cook, who of We Do HR Support. So for those who don't know you, Sarah, welcome. Tell those listening all about you and indeed We Do HR Support.
Hi, Ben. Well, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Sarah Cook, and the company is We Do HR Support. And you guessed it, We Do HR Support. We are a specialist outsourced HR business, and we work with SME businesses to help them make sure that they've got everything they need in terms of HR. Now, that might just be that you're checking your contracts and your handbook are legally compliant and you've got someone on the end of the phone if you have an issue. Or it might be that you want an entire outsourced HR department. And so, you know, for example, it might be HR at Thompson & Terry, and that would come into us and we would deal with all the HR queries that come into your HR inbox. And we would do everything that a normal HR department does. We do set your appraisals going, we design your appraisal system, your competency framework, do your engagement surveys, your exit interviews, design your onboarding and your onboarding processes, your learning and development, and all of those things.
Amazing, amazing. Lots and lots to talk about over the next hour. So thank you for that. But before we do that, always the hardest question. I think you've done this three times now. So, and I'm sure it gets harder each time. So the pressure is on, Sarah. What is your song choice for the radio?
Well, this one is because there are so many legislation changes coming up at the moment. I decided on David Bowie, Changes.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. You can tell Sarah's a professional, can't you? A very fitting song today. So let's jump into the roundtable discussion. I'm going to start with a really, really big question for you, Sarah. I love my big questions. So what is going to change in the world of HR? What is the legislation changes that are upcoming?
Okay, so as of the 6th of April, which was actually yesterday, I don't know why they put it on a Saturday, we have got changes to flexible working legislation. There is a new piece of legislation coming in which allows people who are carers unpaid time off. There are changes to TUPE legislation. There are some guidelines around predictable hours, restrictive covenants in contracts. There's a new focus on right to work checks. There's changes to redundancy protection for maternity leavers or returners or those who are pregnant. There is changes to the way in which holiday can be carried over and calculated, changes to paternity leave, and then all the changes to the minimum wage and statutory sick pay and statutory maternity pay as well. So there is quite a lot coming through in April. And then in October this year as well, we've also got changes to protection from sexual harassment. So there is now going to be an onus on employers to make sure that their workers are protected from sexual harassment as well. So a lot coming up.
Absolutely. So if you are listening at home, get yourself a notepad. You're going to need it over the next hour. Let's start with that. So let's go in reverse order, if that's okay. So sexual harassment is a big problem, isn't it? And it probably is a problem that in a lot of workplaces isn't reported and isn't dealt with in the right way. So what would be your advice? And I appreciate there isn't necessarily a one size fits all. But yeah, build on this sexual harassment piece and what the legislation says. And in reality, what does that mean on the ground for a business?
So basically what the legislation is saying, and this comes into force in October, it's the Worker Protection Amendment to the Equality Act. So that's going to introduce a duty on employers to take reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment of their employees and to make their workplace a safer place. Now, if you fall foul of that, tribunals would have the power to uplift any compensation awarded against you by up to 25%. Yeah, if you are found to have neglected this duty. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it's applied in different types of workplace, because obviously, you know, if you're working in hospitality or something like that, it's potentially going to be harder as an employer to protect people, because, you know, you might have people who are working in a, you know, in a bar or a restaurant or, you know, cleaning hotel bedrooms and things like that. And that's a difficult thing. And so I suppose what you need to do as the employer is you need to make sure that your reporting is really easy and really accessible. You need to make sure that your staff understand that it is not okay for you to be sexually harassed whilst you're in their employment. And that anything can be reported and should be reported, and that there is, you've got to, you know, a process that you will clearly follow. So whilst, you know, we might, as employers, we might go, oh, you know, that's never happened here. It's never happened before. You know, we'll briefly think about what we might do if it would happen. I suppose my advice would be that actually you need to take a little bit more time to think about it. So think about, might not have happened before, but do you actually know it's not happened before, or has it just never been reported before? So really think about what you're going to do to make your staff understand that you are protecting them, putting measures in place to protect them. Let them know what the process is if something does happen and how you will manage that process and how they'll be supported. And think about, you know, perhaps ways in which you can prevent things. So, you know, if you were a bar or a restaurant, have you got signs up that say, you know, as an employer, we have a, you know, a legal duty to protect our employees from harassment. So this is what we are going to do if that happens. Yeah. And sometimes prevention is, you know, half the cure, isn't it? If you've got some posters up there and things, you might make people think twice about making a stupid comment, or, you know, grabbing somebody, or making a stupid joke or something that somebody might find, you know, offensive or find as sexual harassment. And of course, all of these things are in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, you could say something to one person that they wouldn't take offense at, but that another person may take offense. So, you know, you need to be, as an individual, you need to be aware of what you're saying and how offense could be taken. And you need to be ready to, you know, apologize and withdraw a comment, I suppose, if you, you know, if you have, you realize that you've given offense. And, you know, in terms of sexual harassment, touching is never okay. Touching anybody is never okay. So, you know, if you are the sort of person that, you know, might put a hand out or do something, just don't do it. And as an employer, you need to think about, you know, what are your rules? What are your, you know, that you're going to put in place for your customers, for your suppliers, for other staff members? And how are you going to publicize those and get them out there? So I think a lot of that one will be around how you as an employer say, this is what we won't accept, and this is what we will do about it if there is unacceptable behaviour. And it's about publicising that to anybody that might be going to do the unacceptable behaviour, and to anybody who might be subject to unacceptable behaviour, so that they then know that they're going to be supported, you know, and they're going to be, there's a process by which they can complain about treatment that they've had if that's unacceptable treatment.
No, absolutely. I think a phrase that, or a defence or a phrase that is often heard is, oh, it was just banter. And I think it's really worth remembering that banter is only banter if everybody finds it funny, and you really do need to base that on the lowest common denominator. Do you have any sort of points on that phrase? Because it is a very common phrase, isn't it? It's just banter. Like, what can you do as an employer to, I guess, kind of avoid banter, but at the same time, keep it a fun place to work and to keep people engaged and having fun at work?
Yeah, it's really difficult, isn't it? And I think, you know, as an employer, if you ever find yourself kind of like saying, it's just banter, the clue there is it's probably crossed a line somewhere already. If you have to say it's just banter, then it's, you know, it's crossed a line already. And I think it's about maintaining, you know, professionalism. So you can be friendly and you can be informal, but still be professional. And I think it's about that, isn't it? And I think it is really difficult in some workplaces. But I think if you, you know, if you don't have maybe an equal mix or a fairly equal mix of men and women, and you don't have a lot of diversity in your workplace, then it's worth looking at whether there is any kind of, like, you know, workplace banter that you ought to be, you know, looking at. I mean, I quite early on when we started We Do HR Support, We had a client, a new client that we took on, and it was a manufacturing business, and it was quite an old fashioned manufacturing business, and they still had like pinups in the workplace, manufacturing area, and, you know, like page three girls and things like that. No, they don't have those anymore. But I had to say, you know, okay, so you don't, all the women that you have working are in the office, and they don't very often come down onto the shop floor, but you've got apprentices coming in here. And if this was my teenage son, I wouldn't be happy with that being an environment that he was working in. So yeah, you need to think about these things. And also as well, you know, if you want to attract a talented workforce, you could very well have a female apprentice turning up, and, you know, that is not going to be a pleasant environment for that person. And, you know, in fairness, they went, oh god, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, took it all down. But that is, you know, that's the thing. If you haven't changed for a long time, sometimes it's worth getting a fresh pair of eyes in to look at that and go, guys, you know, this is straight out of the 1980s. It needs to, you know, it needs to change. So getting a test on whether your, you know, your banter is acceptable or not. And again, I come back to, if you're using the phrase banter, it's crossed a line. I don't know why. It just, to me, feels like, yeah, if you've got to say, or it's just banter, then it's not just banter.
No, absolutely. One of the things that you touched on earlier, which I thought was really, really interesting, what was the example that you gave of client X who, well, we don't need to look at this because we've never had a complaint. And that is can be really common across all forms of business, can't it? We don't need to do this because we've not had a complaint. And actually, sometimes people could be too scared to say, I'm upset about this, or I'm upset about that, or that made me feel uncomfortable. Are there any skills or techniques that you can use, or you can try as a business, or of course employ We Do HR to support to help you with that, that would really kind of help with really understanding how your staff are truly feeling and really understand, really kind of if there are challenges and make it a more inclusive place to be able to say, actually, I'm not happy about that, or I would like to look at this. What's your take on that point?
Yeah, so I think, and I think the way to think about it is, do your customers never complain? Do you never have a customer complaint? And everybody has a customer complaint at some time or another. And if we think customers have got a complaint, but they're not reporting it and they're just leaving, the same happens with staff. And I think the way to try and uncover these type of things is, first of all, to go out and say, look, these are the behaviours that we want, these are our values, these are our behaviours, this is the sort of thing that we want and expect people to be acting like and behaving like and delivering. And we're gonna, what we want to do is we want to give you a forum whereby you can say that's not actually happening, or you might think that you're behaving like this, but actually behavior is like this. And it's kind of like a test of culture in a way. And the best thing to do, if you think you might have an issue because you've never had a complaint before, and generally you would have had some sort of complaint about most things at some time, then it's worth doing some kind, like a survey, like an engagement survey or a culture survey, where you think about the behaviours and the values that you have as an organisation that you want to uphold. And so what, if you say, for example, you've got a value of doing the right thing. So what does that look like to you? And what does that look like in terms of perhaps, some of the changes in the legislation that you're not sure that you've got on top of, or things? So what would that look like in behaviours in the workplace? And then you ask a question. So you say, managers in this organisation live up to the value of doing the right thing because I regularly see them questioning offensive behaviour or sexist behaviour or, whatever it is. And you get people to say whether they see that all the time, most of the time, some of the time, rarely, or not at all. And if your behaviour, the repeatable behaviour, is happening 80% or more of the time, then that is, that's the culture. That's what you want. You're aiming for 80%+ on this observed behaviour. And then you've got the sort of culture that you want. If you're finding that it's, 50 or 60 or even less than that, then you've got, you've potentially got an issue with that type of behaviour. And so then you can start to look and plan and start action planning for how you improve that and what it is that you want to see. And sometimes it's about giving people examples. It's about saying, so-and-so told this joke and someone else found it offensive. What should they do? What's the right course of action? What should the manager do? What should anybody observing it do? And if you've got people saying, they should say that's not funny. That's not acceptable. I didn't find that, I thought that joke was offensive. Don't tell those sorts of jokes again. Then you've got the right kind of attitude.
Absolutely. No, really, really thought-provoking thoughts there. Thank you so much, Sarah. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is The Business Brunch, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by Sarah Cook of We Do HR Support, who very, very kindly support this show. So thank you for that, Sarah. So so far, we've spoken quite a lot around really legislation changes. And I think the big thing that we've kind of focused on is this case around kind of sexual harassment and what should you be doing as an employer. And I think that that conversation's really very much gone on to that actually there isn't a one size fits all and we need to base it on the lowest common denominator and really kind of reflect what we're doing. One of the other changes that I think is really, really key is the flexible working requests and the change there. So before I ask about what the legislation changes, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I think flexible working and hybrid working and remote working, I think when COVID first happened, everybody was remote, there was a lot more flexibility and I think people really liked it. And then I think the pendulum's maybe gone back a little bit and forwards a little bit and backwards a little bit. What are you seeing on the ground right now in terms of flexible working, hybrid working, remote working? What's popular right now and what are you seeing?
So a mixed bag, really. So we're seeing a lot of stuff, I think, in the, you know, in the media and in the news about, so Boots, there was something about Boots the other day, they're getting everybody back into the office 5 days a week. So I think the media is showing us a lot of larger organisations who are kind of like saying, no, you've got to be back in the office. Mm-hmm. But my experience with SMEs is actually they're quite flexible. Mm-hmm. So it's about getting the job done. So if you can, you know, get the job done, be part of the team, still, you know, interact and collaborate and do what's required, then I think most SMEs are relatively flexible. And of course, you know, this the flexible working banner actually encompasses so many different things. So it could be, you know, flexible working in the sense of where you work. Mm. It could be flexible working in the sense of when you work, or how, you know, how often you work. So there's all sorts of things that come under the banner of flexible working. And I think in the SME business, people are more willing to be flexible for, you know, great talent. So lots of SME businesses have fantastic teams that do a brilliant job for them, and they are prepared to, you know, make changes and adapt to enable those people, you know, to continue doing a great job for them. And I think if you've got that kind of attitude towards it, then you're, you know, you won't very often fall foul of a flexible working request.
Mm, no, absolutely. It's you're so much better off. And I always say, and people find it weird that I say this as a recruiter, but I always say that actually, if you've got good staff, absolutely invest in retention. Recruitment's always so much more expensive than doing a really good job of retention. So let's focus a little bit on this on this HR update then. What is the update in terms of flexible working? What have we been told?
Okay, so as of yesterday, employees now have a day one right to request flexible working. Mm. So that means they don't have to have worked for you for 26 weeks or six months before they can make a flexible working request. It means that employees now have the right to make two flexible working requests in any 12-month rolling period instead of just the one that they had before. And in terms of what they have to put into their request, it's been reduced. So they don't have to put in quite so many details about what they think the issues would be for the employer. That's up to you to decide as the employer what the issues would be. So they don't have to flesh out their request quite so much as they had to. You have to consult with them as the employer, so you have to have a consultation, which, you know, should be, you know, some kind of conversation, whether that be, you know, a face-to-face or across teams or something conversation, or, you know, potentially an exchange of emails, although I wouldn't recommend that. I'd say you need to sit down with the person and talk to them about why it is they're asking, what issue they're trying to solve, if you like, for themselves with it, and just talk about how it could be done. And you, as an employer, you now only have 2 months to respond as opposed to the previous 3 months that you had. So there's a few fundamental changes, and even if you're quite open to flexible working and you've got a policy, you do the requests and you deal with them properly, yeah, you will have to make some updates to your policy so that it's all current. If it's not something that you do very often, or you're not that keen on granting, then you probably need to think a little bit more about, you know, how you address things. And I think for employers, I've spoken to a lot of people who worried about the fact that this is going to be a day one right. So I've had a few people say to me, but what about if I recruit somebody for a job that is 9 to 5, Monday to Friday in the office, and then they come in on the first Monday and they say, I'd like to request flexible working. And my response is, well, you know, they've got a legal right to do that. Mm. But so my advice is, take control. Mm. When you are recruiting for that person, think about what would happen if we found the perfect candidate, but they wanted to do it 4 days a week. Mm. Or we found the perfect candidate, but they wanted to work from home 2 days a week. If they were the perfect candidate, would you be prepared to waive on that? Mm. And, you know, okay, if you are recruiting for a receptionist to sit at a reception desk, then no, maybe you wouldn't be. But a lot of jobs, you can, yeah, if you think about, if you had your perfect person in the job, mm-hmm. what amount of flexibility would you offer? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you can think about it from that perspective. And yeah, in the interview, be in control, talk to people about what your flexible working policy is, why you think this job either needs to be in the office 5 days a week, 9 to 5, or what level of flexibility you'd be prepared to tolerate within the job that you've, you know, and assess it, think about it beforehand, so that you're talking from a place of comfort and knowledge and confidence that this, that you've really thought about this and this is correct. Allow people, you know, say, we're thinking this is 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, but hey, you know, talk to us about it. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you would prefer to do. And then you can start to assess candidates. You know, you might have a fantastic candidate who will be select themselves if you say it's 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, but would be prepared to talk to you if you were going to be a bit more flexible. And I think, you know, then you negate this issue of, if you've talked about it beforehand, you negate this issue of, we took you on to work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and on day one you've come in and said, actually, I only want to be in the office 3 days a week. You can also think about things like probation. So if you've got a probationary period, do you have a policy whereby you say to people, look, we're open to flexible working, but because you're, you know, new to the team, we ask that everybody for the first 3 months is in the office 5 days a week, so you can get to, you know your team, understand who everybody is, build relationships, collaborate, learn about the business and the way in which we work. And then, you know, we're happy to consider flexible working requests. But, you know, at the end of the day, the legislation says that your employees have got a day one right to request it. Mm. They do not have a day one right to have it accepted. So, you know, there are genuine business reasons which you can decline a flexible working request for. And, you know, and you can, you know, if those reasons exist for you as a business, you can definitely decline a flexible working request. So I had a request the other week from one of our clients. They do a lot of work with the states, and we had a request for someone to finish early. And we've declined that request, but we've offered an alternative of starting later because they want to reduce their hours, but it doesn't work for the business for them to reduce their hours in the afternoon, because the afternoon is when you get all the calls from the states in. But it would work for them to reduce their hours in the morning and start later. So, you know, as an employer, we've been able to say, we can't accept that, but how about this as an alternative?
No, absolutely. I think you've made some really good points here. And actually, I think the big word that's come out is really about communication, which I know is something that's really, really key to We Do HR Support in terms of that honesty and that transparency and those communication early on. And actually, I think that one of the points you made, which I think is really, really key, is about that interview process. Because I think that, as you've touched on, if you're able to offer flexible working early on for the right candidate, actually, let's talk about that. Let's make that can be really attractive, and you could get a really strong candidate for that reason. I just want to stay with this interview process, if that's okay, because I think that this is a really good tool. What are you seeing in terms of interview processes right now? Because I think that particularly within the SME market, I think what a lot of SMEs are really, really great at is running their business. So they're a 5-person double glazing firm. Let's focus on poor double glazing people. They might be really good at selling windows or buying windows or installing windows, but they might not necessarily be great at interviewing because of they don't do it very often. They retain staff really well. So what's your advice around kind of the interview process, and what are some of the things that the employers could consider in that space?
So I think one of the things that employers kind of fall foul of quite often is doing a big sell on the company and the job. And you know, if it's a double glazing,
then very fitting.
Really good at doing this. Yeah. And you've got to be honest about what the job is. Mm-hmm. And be honest about some of the, you know, the not so great parts of the job as well as the good parts. And it's really important, because otherwise what you'll do is you'll just get a whole load of turnover. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I think that that's a really key thing. And by spelling out exactly what the job is, some of the bits that aren't quite, you know, this is everyone has to do, you know, their own admin or, you know, this or you know, whatever. And this is a not so good bit about the job, but we quite often, you know, end up working till, you know, 7 o'clock on a Friday evening or whatever. You know, be honest and present the job warts and all. And, you know, you can say, these are some of the not so good bits, but these are the really good bits. Mm. And this is what we're proud of. And actually, you know, if you are working towards reducing everybody's hours, and, you know, this recruitment is part of the fact that we've all been working really long hours because we're really busy. And, you know, that's why we've brought this job on, because, you know, we need more people. But, you know, that's likely to keep going, especially while you're training and learning the role. And there is an expectation that it might be longer hours, but this is what we, you know, this is what we'll do. We do this, or we, you know, we have a pizza night once a month or something and talk about how we're going to, you know, improve the business. Or so I think, you know, that bit of being honest about what's in the job, warts and all, I think is really important, because number one, it builds trust. So the candidate walks out and they go, do you know what, actually, they were pretty good because they told me, you know, some of the stuff that's not so good. Mm-hmm. And I know what to expect now. And if any of that is a deal breaker for your candidate, it's better that they know it at the start. Without and then doubt. They can phone you up and say, do you know what, I'm not interested because of this bit. And then you don't take them on, you don't build them up, you don't think, yay, we've got finally got our new person. And then they go, no, I can't cope with it. I thought I could, but I can't, and I'm leaving. Mm. So be really honest. It builds trust from the very start. Again, and I have said this before, and I make no apologies for saying it again, make sure that your documents, your contract and your handbook sound like the lovely people that interviewed that person and made them want to work with you, rather than something that, you know, the Gestapo wrote. And it's full of, you will not do this and you will not do that and you will not do this, because that breaks trust. So if you've had a wonderful interview and you're really excited about the job, and you feel like they were really honest and I've got a great, you know, view of what the job's about, and then they send out this documentation that has been, I don't know, downloaded off the internet or cannibalized from, you know, someone else's company and this company and that company and you know, somewhere where I used to work sort of thing, and it doesn't reflect the people and the culture of the organization that you're coming into, that can immediately build up a level of mistrust or dissonance or something, so that the person comes in and they're thinking, who am I going to be working with? The lovely people that interviewed me or the people that wrote this handbook and this contract? So I think, you know, that's really, really important that the process feels like, from a candidate's perspective, that it's the same people and it's the same culture all the way through, and they feel comfortable that they're going to come in and they're going to be looked after and they're going to be taught how to do what they're supposed to be doing, that they have an understanding of the things that they're expected to hit the ground running on, mm-hmm. and the things that, you know, where we've got some, you know, some time, some tolerance mm-hmm. to teach you. And all of those things are, you know, it's really important. This the smoother it can be and the closer to each person's expectations it can be, then the better, the quicker that person's going to get up to speed, the more likely you are to retain them, the more likely you are to have, you know, a great new talent in your business delivering for your business. But if everything feels like it's kind of lurching forward, and if it feels like a learner driver, and you're clunking the gears and you're lurching backwards and forwards, slamming the brakes on, speeding off again, all of that kind of like sharp kind of like changes in speed and stuff like that, it's disconcerting if you're new. If you think about it, you're starting in a new job, you're already under pressure, you're already under stress, you've taken a decision to leave where you were before, potentially you've left behind work that you know, that's you had a handle on, people that you know, trying to make new friends, you're trying to learn a new job, all of those things. If as the employer you're making the process difficult as well, then you can understand why people go, that's it, I'm just going to go somewhere else. And I know we have unemployment is rising slightly, but we still in this area particularly have very low unemployment. So most people, if they don't like the job, could walk out and find something else relatively quickly. So my advice is always to make sure that you are thinking about that person's experience and what you want that person to deliver for you, and the smoother you can make their their welcome into the business, the more quickly they are going to be earning their money for you.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I think a phrase I like to use is the biggest cost of recruitment is when it goes wrong. And actually, I think if you as the employer and the candidate can look back in a year's time and say, do you know what? Is it better than I expected? It isn't worse. It's exactly as I expected. Good, bad and ugly. Actually, you've done a really, really good job as an interviewer. So thank you so much for your thoughts so far, Sarah. Let's go to the final section after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. We have had a real treat this morning, haven't we? Sarah always shares such useful content with us. So thank you for that, Sarah. So let's continue with this HR legislation update. So what else is on there? So there's maternity, isn't there? What else should employers be considering or be aware of?
So the changes with the maternity is changes to the protection for people who are pregnant and returning from maternity leave. So that's extended. So if you have anybody in your workplace who's pregnant, or anybody who is on maternity leave or is just returning from maternity leave, up to when the child is 18 months old, they have redundancy protection. So that means if you are making people redundant, and it might be one of those roles that you are making redundant that the pregnant woman or the maternity leaver is in, you have to offer them an alternative role above anybody else. So if you've got a group of 10 people, they all do the same job, you're reducing that to 5 people. So 5 people are losing their jobs, and one's a maternity leaver and one's pregnant. 2 of the jobs that you are keeping are those women's. So, that that is protected by law. So that's a change to that. It was 6 months and now it's been extended to 18 months. Mm. So that's the change there. With paternity leave, they're not making huge changes to paternity leave, but they are making the way in which paternity leave can be taken better. So the notice period that you have to give is less, and you can take the 2 weeks in blocks of a week. So previously you could only take it the 2 week block, and if you chose just to take a week, then you couldn't have the second week any time. And you had to take it before within 56 days of the birth of the child, or being adoption leave, where the baby or child being placed. But now you can take it up to the in the first year. So you could take a week, you know, like as soon as the baby's born, and then you could have another week, you know, a few weeks later or a few months later if you want. Now that's part of the new legislation. So I think that's nice because, you know, dads were losing that. And at a time where you've maybe had to save up and use, you know, some of your savings because mum isn't earning any money, or mum's only getting statutory maternity pay, sometimes you can't afford, if you're only getting the statutory paternity pay, to take the 2 weeks right away. So by having the 12 months to be able to take the 2 weeks, then I think that means that more men will be able to take the paternity leave. And then there's the new carer's leave, which is a week of unpaid leave that anyone can take. If they have caring responsibilities for an elderly person, it doesn't have to be a relative. It can be someone who is, you know, like a, you know, an elderly neighbour that you've taken on caring responsibilities for. So, and you can have up to a week's leave in a 12-month period. It's unpaid. You have to give a certain amount of notice to the employer, and you can take the week in days, half days, you know, all at once, or, you know, whatever. So that is a brand new piece of legislation. We've been waiting for that to come in for a while, and it's finally come through. So that will be something that employers will need. A, they'll need to recognise that there is that legislation, and they'll need to put that into their, you know, into their documentation as well, so that they've got that.
Amazing. No, absolutely. And it sounds like a really good initiative, doesn't it? Because there are a lot of people that need help, and there are a lot of people that have got really big caring strains. So no, really, that's a good one. That's a good one. So just kind of moving kind of towards the end of the show, really, just really kind of whether we're kind of moving away from the new legislation, looking at old, current, just best practice. Like what are some of the things that you're seeing with your clients at the moment in terms of things to consider, things that are, I guess, kind of common mistakes that you're seeing happening? What for those listening right now, what some good things to kind of put on your notepad?
So I think we're still seeing a lot of people thinking about retention. So, you know, as you said, the recruitment is most expensive when it goes wrong. And you should, you know, look after the staff that you've got and make them want to stay with you. So we're seeing a lot of people actually thinking about that and thinking about, oh, OK, so what do I need to do to retain staff? And so, you know, benefits is always something that you can look at, because I think that, you know, you can make quite small investments, really, in adding a few benefits for people, which means that they will, you know, they'll maybe think twice about, you know, leaving you and going to work for someone else. And I think this, you know, the idea of communication and being clear about, you know, what's coming in. And when you've got a change in legislation and you're changing a policy or putting in a new policy and updating things, it's a good time to say to everyone, okay, so, you know, let's actually go through all of our policies and procedures. Let's update all the bits and pieces that are perhaps a bit out of date. And let's talk to people about, you know, this is how we do stuff. These are the rules and regulations. You know, these are, you know, our practices. What do you think? You know, would you like changes, you know, to anything else? What do you think we should be doing? And you can communicate then not only the changes in the legislation, but ask for ideas from staff, communicate new ideas that you've had, things that you're going to put in place. And, you know, it's a good excuse to talk to people, to find out, you know, where there are blockers in the way, where people aren't understanding things, they haven't noticed stuff. You know, sometimes we get so busy and we're all so busy doing the job that we're doing that, you know, some stuff goes, you know, straight over your head. I mean, I myself the other day, I kind of went, well, nobody told me that was happening. And then I realized, oh, somebody had told me it. So I was just so busy that I hadn't even clocked it. So, yeah, that can happen a lot as well. And just because you send out an email saying, you know, notice to all, this is happening, it doesn't mean that everybody's read it and understood it. And it, you know, and it's very dependent, those sorts of things as well, the way you communicate, on people's styles and the way they take in and process information. So I am not very good at taking on board new information from emails, especially if it's as part of an attachment to an email. So you can pretty much near enough guarantee I might scan your email, but I probably won't read your attachment. So, you know, if you want to communicate to people like me, you probably need to jump on a Teams call or just come and talk to me about it, or get on the phone or something, because I'm much more likely to remember if I've had a meeting about it or if I've had a call about it. Whereas other people are much more likely to remember it, you know, they might have a call and they might say, can you send me that on an email so that I remember? So when you're communicating these changes and updates and things, just remember that not everybody in the organization takes in and processes information in the same way. And it's always good to have a kind of like multi-channel, if you like, approach to communicating both new things and old things to people. You're more likely to, you know, to get the retention of the message if you've used a few different ways to communicate it.
Amazing, really, really good advice. I feel so unfair to you, Sarah, to ask you for a tip to end the show, because you've been giving tips for the last hour. But so I'm gonna give you a trick card here. So if you want to use a tip that you've already made, you absolutely can, but we've got about 30 seconds left. So as your takeaway tip, whether it be something that we've discussed already or something fresh, what would be your takeaway tip under the umbrella of HR?
So I think my tip would be to make sure that you understand what the changes are happening this year in the legislation, and make sure that you have updated everything that you need to update, your handbook, your contract, et cetera, and your processes. And if people want to know in a short document everything that's changing, they can go to our website and just download our newsletter. So it's got everything in there, so you can just go through and go, I've done that.
Amazing, great advice as always. But unfortunately, that is the end of the show. So thank you so much to Sarah for joining me today and making it such an easy show to present. And also thank you to Sarah for kindly sponsoring the show. As without Sarah, it could not happen. So please, if you don't know Sarah already, do check out Sarah Cook, and do check out We Do HR Support. There's always some great content there. And also thank you to you, the listener, for listening to us today and for listening to us for about 160 shows before now, which is amazing. So just a final reminder that you can listen to this show online and on via the radio every Sunday. There is also a podcast format which is available for all your favorite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And also there's a video format that is available on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. I will be back next week, and next week we've got something a little bit different. So we are going to be talking about Hook Norton Community Land Trust, so where they've built 12 amazing, really, really affordable houses that are eco houses, environmentally friendly, and they've come together as a village to do that. So that'll be really, really interesting. But for now, do enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and I look forward to seeing you next week.